Any additions to the agenda or changes? We've got one that the health department needs to be on the agenda.
Yeah.
Is that acceptable to the council?
Yeah.
All right. Anything else? Okay, the minutes. Make a motion to approve the minutes of November 18th.
Some of it.
Second.
All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Minutes approved. All right. The old business, the new business, we'll take the health department first.
Hello, I'm Tomi Elmore, I'm the president of the Brown County Health Board.
Is it on?
Turn your mic on, Tomi. There you go.
Okay.
Now say your name.
Can you hear me now?
Oh, there you go.
All right. I am Tomi Elmore, I'm president of the Brown County Health Board, and you should have all received a letter from us today. And it is a discussion about the proposed restructure of the Brown County Health Department, environmental staff. So...
Can you first update us on the new doctor and all that stuff briefly?
Sure.
Sure.
Yeah.
Let's bring this up today.
We had a meeting the other week and we approved, and the council, the commissioners did approve Dr. Michael Conway. And he comes to us with a lot of qualifications and we're really excited to have him. He's currently a health officer in another county. And he's moved down here, his wife's a nurse down here, and he's really excited to start working with us. He plans on coming to a lot of the meetings and kind of get a sense of Brown County government and what's going on. So we're really excited to have him on board.
He'd like to meet any of them.
Right.
He's going to meet them on Wednesday, so anybody that's interested.
Yeah. Well, that'd be great. He's going to be a great asset to the board, to the company. Yeah. All righty. We can just go through this as it's written here. How we're going to restructure the distribution of pay. We have a vacated supervisor position, and that amount is $43,621.80. And we are going to create a second environmental assistant position. And the amount is $37,276.88 and startup pay grade 9. This will provide time to train and certify environmental assistant positions. So when there's an available environmental specialist position, they will be ready in advance to open positions. This will leave a balance of $6,344.92 from the environmental supervisor position. And so you can see how that's distributed into the two assistant and supervisor positions. So then the pay grade changes will be taken out of the available balance and will be applied to the current environmental specialist positions. This kind of sounds confusing, but it's pretty easy if you kind of look at the structure of it. We're going to raise their pay grade. It's currently a 12 to a 14. And last week, the health board voted unanimously to approve the changes. And so all of the funds have been allocated in the 2025 budget, so we're not asking for any new funds. It's just a redistributing the funds that we have so that we have take care of the employees that we have and the two new assistant positions. We also are updating the job descriptions of the new assistant positions, and the Board of Commissioners will have to approve those when we're done. Any questions? You're so amazed.
Is this going to affect any hires downstream?
I can't say at this point. I don't think so.
Any other questions?
When would you like to get this approved?
today.
We get the job descriptions tomorrow and go before the commissioners on Wednesday.
Right. Yeah. And of course, you know that WIS is looking at all of these right now.
Actually, WIS has this, all the whole entire Howard reconstruction, and Lori's had it since last week, and she is finishing it up for us.
Okay, but I just was making sure that you were aware of it.
So, I mean, I don't know what council feels about doing this immediately, but we just got it today, so it's kind of a pretty quick turnaround. So, I mean, if we're going to do this tonight, I'm going to have many questions.
Okay.
No questions.
I mean, first off, is just why?
Why?
Why does it need to be restructured?
We have a vacant position, and we have an aging...
Well, it's more like it's about time we had it restructured.
We have a position that's open, and we have two other senior positions at present. With the potential of retiring age and, you know, that kind of gets into personality person. But anyway, we want to be able to train people now. That way they'll be able to be up to speed when we lose or other people decide to retire.
We do have one retirement date turned in.
Yeah. So we're going to lose a lot of experienced people if we don't find people to work with them and kind of become tutored by the current specialists, we'll be having a lot of difficulty filling those positions at the... Yeah.
Scott, if you will recall, I reached out 3 years ago, got really no response, but to try to facilitate this, unfortunately, it is now coming toward us because I thought we were trying to work proactively with the health department up there trying to do the best of the time and didn't get much of any response actually. But
I can't really hear anything.
This is what they're trying to do now is to try to fill these positions with feeder people so that, as you said, they can be trained and be able to take over when people retire.
And rather than waiting until we are presented with that problem, this was kind of an immediate solution to find people and be proactive about, you know, planning for the future. And so that's why we thought, well, this would be the perfect solution. There's no additional funds needed. We'll get some new people in. We'll train them. And then we'll be ready to go when something changes in the future.
Something that might kind of help you is we did interview for the HFI position that we got, that we have already got, and we have a job description and all that for the assistant. And we had two applicants that were absolutely amazing. And one of them we went on ahead and hired, and the other one I would love to hire and get her in and not lose her. She has a lot of experience in the health world. She's worked in county government for many years. I think Jennifer was very, her and Ernie were very impressed with her, and we would really like to bring her along. She just moved to Bryan County. She doesn't want to drive to Hamilton County where she is employed right now. And the pay cut is not a deal for her right now. It's not a problem for her family. And so I cannot offer her the job unless I have a position. So that's very rough.
So you announced one job and you got two good applicants.
That doesn't come very often. And when we announced the $60,000 position that you gave us attrition money for to hire a professional, they laughed at us. People with degrees that can go and do those things, they wanted 70, 80,000. They didn't want 60. So we decided then that we knew that we were going to have to go and train our own, let them start and then
Melissa,
build up.
We really need you to be at the mic if you're going to talk.
So we just needed to let them be able to start at the bottom and move their way up and get certifications. And Jen, with her food experience and the things that she knows, knows, and Ernie with his and Seth experience, they have plans to how they're going to design these programs and how they're going to bring them up and teach them what they need to know to do these two positions. What a gift for Brown County, because we're not going to have to go out there and try to find an environmental specialist with all these certifications. They're going to work their way up from a 9, and they get, and once they get so many, they're going to get a 10, and then once they get into a real a further position, they'll be a 14. So this is exactly what you guys have been talking about all these times, on how to build and let people go up with pay grades and not be locked into something. And so this was our chance to be able to restructure.
So I don't think I heard this right, but I thought I heard you say no budget impact.
No.
How is
so
that?
We have an 1160 fund that we did the first position in with the HFI. And we do realize that that could go away in a year. But we also have someone has made an announcement, so we also know that timing is also of the essence. So we have 1159, where is the other budget that we have the other supervisory role in, that would be the one that we're breaking down to make all these changes. So it's no impact to the budget. Actually, there'll be a little bit of money left over.
Any other questions? Okay. So we just need to approve this?
Yep.
Yeah, so I do have a question for you. So are you saying that, I don't know what pay grade that environmental supervisor is, do you know that?
Yes, John has a pay grade.
Looks like a 14 based on the previous line in the meeting. Well,
14.
And so you're not going to fill that position. You're going to kind of wipe that position out.
Correct.
Okay.
We've already turned that into WIS, and that position no longer exists.
So when they change their salary ordinance, they need to remove that position.
That's what, that's
put
what
in the second. And then, so then what you will also do is a reduction of your appropriation for that fund and an additional appropriation in another, in either that assistant line item, so there will be two identified in that line item, or if you break it down, line, you know, position is a separate line item, you add another line. Does that make sense?
Okay, so how do we?
It could be a transfer. It's probably in the same one.
It is. They're all right there together.
So.
So what do we do to approve
salary ordinance
at this point?
Okay. When Julia redoes the salary ordinance, it'll be in there.
That's it.
We can get the salary ordinance done.
Yeah, I know we need to do that for other things too, so that's it.
Yep.
Okay.
And then it's a transfer from the one line item to another line item.
Right.
Yes. So I can do that transfer paperwork tomorrow.
Okay.
And that's a line item within the line item, so it doesn't have to have council. We don't have to come back again. It's just
it's in the same.
It's in the 1,000. Mm-hmm.
I guess the other thing, I mean, I'm still not quite exactly sure what's happening here, just having received it today, but how long will the positions overlap?
Well, we don't know for sure. I know that we have had one. It's very, I can't, there's a lot of things. I can't, due to age discrimination.
Sure.
Yeah,
no, I understand
about
that.
But I do know that we know that there will be a position that someone will be filling. Could be a little over a year. But they're going to need that to be trained. I mean, there is so much to learn as far as on either areas. So
the person is not skilled or trained in this already?
No. One applicant is actually works for IU and works in student services.
They do know about IC codes and regulations. And the other person has actually, she's got a lot of experience in a lot of different ways, doesn't she, Jen? She's worked out in the public, corrections officer years ago. She is in the office all the time now, does not want to be in an office, she wants to be outside. She wants a job where she's outside all the time, as much as she can be, so.
For posterity's sake, let me feed this back to you. It's pretty simple. You're getting rid of the environmental supervisor position. That's gone.
That's gone.
Okay. We hire a newbie, bring him in at pay grade 9. We take the delta from the current person that we have on staff that's going to train the newbie.
That's right.
We're going to subtract that, and we're going to give that person a pay grade.
Right.
Up from a 12 or what is it? From a 12 to 14,
right, yes.
Which is long overdue.
Right.
So that's pretty simple. And it all stays within the same line items, so who cares?
It doesn't change anything.
Nope. So I'm good with it.
Thank you.
Man, are you sure? Awesome. Help me catch up here. You said it's long overdue. What?
Because they have been operating at a pay grade 12 for a number of years. And it's truly amazing what these two people do in a day. Sometimes their days start at like 7 o'clock in the morning and go even into the weekends with the new food truck situation that we have throughout the county. Jen has to inspect food trucks in the evenings and on the weekends when they have all of these big festivals and things that are doing. So there's not only a lot of work, there's a lot to learn. And that in tourism is part of our industry here. So she keeps restaurants open and everybody from having food-borne illnesses and stays on top of everything. And the same thing is we don't have regional sewer districts, so we're down to septics only. And Ernie has to take care of every single one of those. So it's a lot to do.
We've got a lot of new tourist homes developed that require septic inspections.
Yeah.
And then are we doing hot tubs now as
well? Yeah, the Jen could... Yes, please.
So she got the new food truck.
Yes.
Don't forget that yet.
Yeah, we did. I'm one of the older people, obviously, in the environmental staff. We have not been doing pools and spas for years. It is part of the new KPIs that they do want us to start inspecting pools and spas. It's not a super major inspection, but there are certain parameters they have to meet. And there will be a licensing fee involved. We'll have to develop that whole situation for them. As far as the food trucks and the events, I counted, I did 30 different events over the summer with 67 different food trucks. So we're doing a lot of that going on, and that's extra time too, of course. And then just keeping track of the restaurants, and they kind of have limited hours now, so I kind of have to cram everything into the days that they're actually open. So it's been a little bit challenging. Like Kevin said, we're getting ready to take on the new 2022 food code, and the state has been going through it and adapting it to Indiana. The FDA sets out the food code, and then the states take it and they say, this is good, this is not good, and they adapt it to the individual state. This is a long process. It goes through legislation. Right now it's under public comment over the state, and then eventually it gets to the governor who signs it, and then all the 92 health departments will take the new food code, and that will be what we go by instead of the one we've been working with, which is the 2001 food code. So we're kind of far behind.
So you do all that? Hot tubs, pools, food trucks, tourist homes, events, restaurants,
markets.
Tattoo parlors, eyelash, all that stuff.
Sounds like a lot of work.
Yeah, it doesn't want to get done as well as it could be. That's why we're hoping we get these assistants in, or we're going to start training. And Brown County is special, you know. There's certain things that go on in Brown County that we want to pass on to them, and we want them to have knowledge of it, so they can move into these positions seamlessly instead of someone just jumping in, trying to figure out how things go.
So it's a lot of work, and it's getting to be more work. We've got more tourist homes going up, more events, more now we have hot tubs.
Right.
Stimulate some more restaurant activity, which is good. And so your pay needs to follow, is my, I understand now. Yeah, we've got to pay for people with skills to do all these extra services to serve. Yeah, our tourist economy.
Right.
I'm okay with it.
Okay, any other questions?
Any questions?
No, thank you. We're good.
Take a motion?
Sure.
I'll make a motion, we approve as written.
I'll second.
Motion made and seconded, all in favor, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, motion passed. Okay, thank you very much, appreciate your work.
Thank you.
You don't have to stay. Wow, I didn't leave right now, I just.
I'm gonna leave unless you send me.
Don't rush off, please.
Okay, next item is innkeeper's tax. Scott?
I think we probably should put 1782 notice on here, but I know Jim has done a lot of research on that and has dug in, probably more than, well, not quite as much as I would like to him over the weekend, but it sounds like he's at least got a good grip on it. Want us to be brief as a council, what we're looking at, because it's not quite what we were thinking, it's not as good. So, Jim, 30 seconds. No, go ahead.
Yeah, I'm going to keep this brief, because you're right, I could talk for 2 hours if you'd like to, but we need to get some popcorn and, you know. It's real simple. And I'll just use the general fund as an example, because that's where, you know, the bulk of the department's labor costs, everything kind of comes out of the general fund. For 2025, we'll have approximately $9 million a year in revenue for 2025, approximately. And we got $9.7 million in expenses. So that means I call it $700,000 upside down. So it's real simple. If you're spending more than you're taking in, if you got any money in the checking and savings before too long, that goes away. So, and as far as the consequences, if and when that occurs, and I talked to our rep today with the DLGF probably for a good 30, 40 minutes on this issue, is that if that, it's called cash reserves, so just think of it in terms of your checking and savings account. If that cash reserve number goes to zero, and we got to redo 26 budget, and now let's say 26 budget, we're 800,000 upside down on the 26 budget, then the DLGF won't approve our budget. It's real simple. And they'll just come back and say, you got to cut your expenses by $800,000. And you got to remember, biggest expense any organization has is labor cost. So we would literally have to go through and cross the board and do a massive headcount cut just to get the budget approved. So that's where we are. And the risk going forward for 25 and 26, Lord forbid that we have any unforeseen big expense show up that we're not prepared for, then we're in trouble. So that's the reason the council's going to have to get real focused in 25 with a focus on 26. So that's my 30 seconds.
So if we had to cut 800,000, Jim, where would you start? What departments?
Okay.
Non-essential? I mean, you're not going to start with public safety, right? You'd start with...
Well, first of all, no, I don't know that I really want to... I know exactly what needs to be done. No, I mean, I know what we've got to take a hard look at, okay? And we all know that we've discussed PERF. So that right there, that's $650,000-$700,000 a year. That's an area. I absolutely would not want to do anything to the group medical. It's going to be employee benefits is where the cuts are going to have to come from.
You think that PERF could be, carried out in 1 year? Are we going to have to pay off? We're not going to see that benefit for...
Actually, in the PERF, if the PERF, which Susan and I, as soon as Julie gets the names into the ERM system, and I'd really like to get started on that in January, if we could, please. we're probably going to wind up having to negotiate with PERF once we go through and do a complete census of, you know, who are the people that are retired, they're currently pulling pensions off of the PERF, who are the people that are close to that, you know, remember, it's 65 and 10 years, it's age 60 and 15 years, it's age 55 and 30 years. So any employee that is close to meeting those requirements to pull their pension, you know, there's no way we're going to take that away from them, right? So what we'll probably end up having to do is, you know, negotiate, if the council chooses to do this, negotiate an approach to where if you're hired by such and such a date, if you're hired after this date, you will no longer be enrolled in PERF. If you're continue employment before this date, then we'll continue to fund PERF on that employee's behalf. So I don't think we're going to see, I think it's unrealistic to think that we're going to be able to go in and free up 700 grand. But I don't, you know, so I don't know until we can work with Susan and I can work with PERF to get the census data, to get with them, to have them do the calculations to see how that comes back. I would like to think that we ought to be able to have that done. I'd like to see that done by the first quarter, Susan, of 2025. Because if we could get that to know where we are with PERF, then we can work on, because no changes would be implemented until 2026, correct? Right, so that's an area, you know, and there's some other things that we need to take a look at, but I don't think this is the time or the place to discuss this.
Yeah, it's. I think what I'm hearing you say is our budget situation is looking not just worse than we thought, but the wall we've been talking about hitting for 4 years now, or maybe we've been talking about for two.
Yeah, we've been talking about for two.
It's, how far out is it?
What scares me for 26 is we've got, I believe it's an AT&T contract, and we've got to get with the commissioners, you know, January 1, and have them contact AT&T to find out what that contract's going to renew at in 2026. I mean, I've heard numbers, you know, it's $1 million.
$1 million to a million?
Yeah, I heard it's a lot, and I was, you know, what opened the door was in 2023 when the previous sheriff brought it to my attention, because what happened, it's a 10-year contract, and when this contract came up for renewal 10 years ago, I guess it'd be what, 2016 or 2017, we didn't have the money to pay it. So what we did is we ended up doing a 10-year installment agreement, and as all of you know, when you spread it out over 10 years, you're going to pay a lot more money. So it ended up costing us quite a bit more had we been prepared for that expense. So I would much rather see us get prepared to be able to cut a check rather than trying to amateurize it for 10 years. So that's one issue that concerns me that's laying out there. But then on the other thing too, you know, and Scott, in the council, if you'll remember earlier this year, and Susan drafted it, I don't know what month we did that, but we signed and voted on it wasn't an ordinance, it was a resolution for $2.5 million in the rainy day fund, which I think we're setting at $177,000. So we passed and said, in theory, that our goal is to get that rainy day fund back to $2.5 million. In addition to that, we also agreed and passed a resolution to get $1 million in reserves in the 4700 account. Because like right now, we're gonna have to come back here and vote on those additional appropriations because we've got to put another 200 grand in the 4700 account just for 2024 because the $1.8 million didn't cover the expenses. So we've got that needs to be done. You know, in a perfect world, which, you know, we don't live in, there's, you know, the only thing that's perfect in life is the present. It would be great if, you know, A, we maintain 15% cash reserves. Of course, that 15% is calculated based off the revenue. And in addition to that, if we could work towards getting our expenses essentially at 90% of revenues, because in order to be able to find $3.5 million to create, to escrow this money, we've got to free up some discretionary income. But we can't free up any discretionary income if, you know, for every dollar we bring in, we're spending $1.10. That's not going to happen. And furthermore, when you look at the big picture, you know, to a 30,000 foot view, you know, I think the history was, is that several years ago, we did a general obligation bond for $1 million. And we did that, and we turned around and opened one up for $3 million. And then of the $3 million that we did, per the State Board of Accounts, we got written up over it because there were several hundred thousands of dollars in that $3 million that was used for operating expenses, which is a huge no-no. You know, we can borrow money for capital improvements, that's fine. But to go borrow money for capital improvements and then turn right around to use it to pay off your operating expenses, I mean, it's just bad management all the way around. So we've gone from $1 million to $3 million, and now we just did $4 million. So we're having to borrow money because we don't have any money saved because we're spending more than we're taking in and we're burning down our savings account. And that's where we are. And it's just, you know. So it's going to take us, the seven of us, to really roll our sleeves up and really focus, do a better job of, and I said this earlier last work session, what, you know, my goal, if it were up to me and I was king for a day, what I would like to see us do is have a very, very, very solid revenue assumption for 26 through all the funds, then go through the 25 budget, look at what we allocated per, you know, the 27, because you got to keep in mind we've got basically 27 little businesses that are out here operating, and be in a position to where we can tell every department how much money they have to spend for 2026. Because all I know is if I was managing a department, all right, I want to know how much money am I going to get for 2026 so I can sit down and take a hard look at my budget and be able to base my budget off of how much money you're going to give me to spend for 2026, as opposed to the way we're doing it now, which is the departments submit their Form 1s, got to have them in by July. They don't know how much money they're supposed to get, right? And they submit their Form 1s, and then, you know, the challenge this year for 25 is that, I'll speak for myself, I had absolutely no active involvement in the 2025 budget. So in order for me to see what's in the budget, I have to go into Gateway and pull it up in Gateway and look at it there. But I didn't have any involvement. So I, you know, the one thing that we're elected to do, our primary responsibility, is fiscal policy. That's it. And our responsibility is to understand how much money we got coming in and understand where it's going and make sure we communicate that, you know, in the most effective way we can to all the department heads so that they understand. And then obviously we got to work with the commissioner's office to make sure that, you know, they're, that, because I noticed when I parked this morning, if you look, or excuse me, this afternoon, in this building, there's a bunch of boring bees that have eaten into the wood when you first come into the entrance here. So there's maintenance, you know, how much maintenance do we have that hasn't been taken care of, that's going to need to be taken care of? And so, you know, if the AC, I don't know how many HVAC units this building has or what the total square footage is. Well, but if something happens, what are you going to do? So I'm way over my 30 seconds.
Yeah, that was well done, Jim. I said you could talk for 2 hours, but so that's assuming no changes occur to our existing budget. The scenario you just gave, zero changes in expenses or revenues. Okay, now I think we can assume that within our justice system, we are absolutely going to see increased expenses. What does that do to our budget?
The health department, let's just use that because they were just here. We we agreed, we're going to spend $45,000 with Wagner, Irwin, and Sheely, for those that are in the audience. And they're coming in, actually they've already started. And they're going to look at every department, and they're going to look at all of the job descriptions to make sure the job descriptions are accurate and well represented. And then they're going to go out and look at counties our size, and then they're probably going to have to look at the counties that surround us and do that work. And then they're going to come back, and then they're going to tell us, you know, what that those job descriptions and the compensation ought to be, you know, for these job descriptions. So, for example, with the health department person, you know, they're going to bring somebody, a brand new rookie, basically landed a pay grade 9. We've got to train this person, get them up and running, and get them certified. And then what happens once that person gets certified and get all their training, and do we end up losing them to Monroe? You know, because the other part, the downside with where we live, in my opinion, I mean, there's a pro and con. You know, we're 15.5 in population. We live smack dab in the middle of 500,000 people. And the 500,000 is the five surrounding counties. The cool thing with where we live is the five surrounding counties got $29.5 billion in gross domestic product. And I think it's pretty cool to we live next to Bartholomew County, which is number 6 in the state of Indiana on GDP per capita. But the problem with living with these counties that got all these manufacturing jobs, these high-paying manufacturing jobs, is it puts a lot of pressure for county government to try to bring people in based off of what we can cash flow. And it's the same thing, the catch-22 we've got with the sheriff's department, the sheriff deputies. You know, we put a Band-Aid on it for, you know, 2024, but we really haven't addressed the reality that, you know, the state of Indiana was a $72,000 for a brand new road trooper. So we've got really a lot of pressure on our labor costs. And so the challenge going forward with A, trying to, you know, bring our expenses in, but at the same time, make sure that we're very, very, very competitive, right? I mean, this, being quite honest with you, this is probably that's what I find most fascinating, the most fascinating math story problem I've ever had to tackle, because it's a really complicated story problem.
Well, so I think what you're saying is if our labor costs have upward pressure, the scenario you previously described is going to get worse more quickly.
Well, how do you measure the cost of attrition? How do we measure the cost if the sheriff's department has, say, 17 deputies, but we've got 17 deputies that have got less than 2 years on the job? You know, how do you measure that cost because of that attrition? And so to me, you know, I don't care what business you run, employee turnover is not a good thing at all. Well, and so we've got to focus on employee turnover. And of course, the thing I keep, you know, it's a difficult, and it's a really, really difficult story problem. And then on top of it, you know, my concern for the county long term, when I say long term, thinking of the next 25 years, is what I don't know is how many, if we went back and looked at the last 10 years worth of real estate transactions, of those real estate transactions, what percentage of people are buying up the county's real estate, but they actually live out of county? That's important because I talked to the guy with the DLGF today, and when you look at the general fund and you look at the amount of property tax that comes in, and then you look at the income tax, well, who's paying the bills for the county are those individuals that live in the county but work outside the county, because we are at the highest. We're at 2.5% income tax, right? So the challenge going forward is if you know, the thing of it is we don't know, because we did not ask the questions, we've not gathered the data to do the reporting to see actually what is happening. But if we've got people buying up our real estate, driving up our real estate prices, who live outside of town, and at the same time they have an incentive to buy our real estate because they can turn right around and turn it into a rental property, So now we've got all these tourist homes, which has taken the inventory out of what we have, which means we don't have workforce housing, we don't have residential housing. You're going to begin to cut away at that income tax revenue, and you're going to watch your income tax revenue begin to shrivel up over time. And then the other part of it too, Scott, is you got to factor in what happened. You know, Cummins is sitting over there, and we all assume that Cummins will be around for a long time, and I hope and pray that's true. But we don't know that. I don't know that. And it's for some unknown reason we hit it and we move into an economic turndown, and unemployment jumps to 10%. That's going to hurt our income tax revenue. So there's a multiple of variables involved on this story problem. And that's why I think it's absolutely critical for us as a council to really narrow our focus, right? And be a student of the subject, if you will. Because the first things first is we've got to do everything we can to understand the complexity of the challenge before us before we start making decisions on how we're going to try to solve it. Is that fair?
I think that's fair. I just one quick, you could ask the question, how do we measure the cost? Well, how I measure the cost, and I think our sheriff's given us examples of a county to the south of ours that was unable to provide law enforcement service overnight because we were unable to have enough deputies. They were to patrol 24 hours a day. That's how I start to measure the cost. You know, homes being lost, ambulance responses of an hour plus, completely volunteer fire service, 911 expenses we may not be able to afford, etc. So that's where I kind of draw the line, and we've got to hold that line, and we can't hold the line with our current budget, let alone increase in budget, and it gets worse. We're hearing from the state legislature and the governor that they are about to cut our property tax revenues. Yeah. State legislature and the governor is telling the public that they're about to cut our property tax revenues, which means our budget is going to drop on top of increases in pay, can't cover our current expense. So, Jim, if our revenue drop, what's that third scenario view to us?
Well, again, I've equated it this way to people out in the community. Bob and Joan, for the last several years, have gotten a lot of overtime. And a Saturday morning, they get up and they drive up to Greenwood and they want to go have lunch. So they drive up to Greenwood, they have lunch, and after lunch, they get in their car and they make the fatal mistake of driving into Huber Chevrolet. 3 hours later, they drive away in a brand new four-door, half-ton Chevy Silverado. $1,000 a month payment. They're excited. Got us a new Chevy. We've always wanted a new Chevy Silverado. And over the last previous 3 years, they built up some pretty good chunk of change in their checking and savings. So they felt pretty good about that. And they drive away, and they're in their Silverado. But sure as luck has it, 6 months later, the overtime goes away. Now, all of a sudden, they're having a real tough time making those, 84-month, $1,000-a-month truck payments. And so what they do to make up for it is they've got to dip into their savings to be able to pay all their bills to make ends meet, right? And what happens once their savings account goes away and there's no money left? Truck gets repoed because they don't have the money to pay it. And that, to me, is basically where we are as a county. I mean, we're living on borrowed time.
So is it safe to say it's not good?
Do you want your truck repoed?
Okay.
That doesn't look good on your credit rating. Because, see, I didn't even bring that up. The other, we're a double A minus right now with S&P, right? And so, if we don't get the ship turned around and righted, this will influence our credit rating. And, that's just not a good thing.
And this has what to do with the community?
We're getting into that now.
Yeah.
We're getting into that now. So Jim, I mean, is it a good idea for us to wait until next year to start thinking about this, or should we start doing something now?
Okay, if you're leveraging me as a precursor to your...
Yeah, I am. I'm glad you picked up on that.
Well, I had a person call me earlier about this innkeeper's tax thing, and I said, hey, it's up to me, I charge 20%, okay? So if there's a possibility that we can increase our revenue without taxing the people who call Brown County home, why would we not do that?
But I mean, in general, we need to... This is becoming more and more urgent. Is my point, right? This isn't let's wait till 26 budget year to think about it.
Our sheriff, we got a $300,000 to $400,000 problem with the sheriff deputies right now. Not only that, we have employees that, you know, granted they've got a great benefit package, but all they're going to look at is to see how much money is being deposited in their checking account every month. And what they know is they're having a hard time living on that. So we've got pressure on our labor costs, and you know we're going to have to. Because if we, when WIS gets finished with their work, and they come back and say, "Here's what we recommend that you do," and it's going to cost you another $700,000 a year to implement what we just paid them $45,000 to do. Why did we pay them $45,000 to come in and do an assessment when we don't even have the money to implement what we hired them to do? That, to me, doesn't make any sense. So, because we just blew $45,000, in my opinion. So we did it, and so, Scott, if you can increase the innkeeper's tax, you know, if by chance that flies through, which, you know, I'm not real, you know, who knows?
Yeah. Okay. So I think we've got, you know, the council, we needed to understand what our situation is from a budget perspective, coming fresh off the 1782 notice, which for the public's information is the state's final notification to us of what our budget is, how much we have coming in, what our expenses are, and it's not as rosy as we thought it was. So we needed to understand where we are before I go into what the council asked me to do, which is to talk about legislation and revenues, because we can't cut ourselves out of this. We need to continue to cut, but we've got maybe four options is kind of what I'm thinking of. We can do nothing, and that's not going to end well. We can raise, let me go back. The legislature and the governor are projecting out into the public in articles that they're going to cut our property taxes, and they're not going to replace it with any revenue. And what they're recommending we do is raise income taxes on you, raise property taxes on you, or get creative with other ways to make that work. From my perspective, you know, growing up here, I think for a county of 15,000 people, we've shouldered a lot of burden to host 3 million people a year in our tax rates. And so I'm real leery of adding to that tax and income and property tax, and quite frankly, I'd probably vote against it. But there is another way, and that is, there's two other ways. We could support, as a council and commissioners, a state park gate fee bill that Dave Hall is planning to submit for numerous counties that are in the situation we are, where 2 million people pour into a park, the park pays zero property taxes. A county of 15,000 pays for all public services, fire, ambulance, police, 911, etc., etc., etc. We pay all of it. They pay nothing, okay, in property taxes. There are some income taxes generated by some positions there if those folks live in our county. The rest is on our shoulders and always has been. And it's really on Brad Stockstill's shoulders, the volunteer firefighters, the ambulance, you know, fire, you know, all the search and rescue volunteers, it's on their shoulders, right? And we're not able to do enough for them right now as it sits, in my opinion. The gate fee tax could generate, I'm guessing, $200,000 to $350,000 a year, just roughly, for Brown County. And my understanding is that's always been intended to go to public safety. It's also been tried 10, 20 years in a row and has failed every single year. This year is different from my sense, having followed it all those years, and I know this public safety folks in the back have followed it as well. The major change is they're about to cut our property taxes and not replace it with any revenue. And what they're telling us to do is exactly like the gate fee, and it's exactly like the innkeeper's tax increase. The innkeeper's tax is currently at 5%, and the state max is 8%. Several counties are at that 8%. Some are even above that. If you go to Marion, you pay 20-some percent after all the downtown taxes and all this stuff. 3% increase in innkeeper's tax, which again, gate fee and innkeeper's tax results in zero pennies taxed to you. Zero. Zero. And so that would result in another maybe $700,000, $750,000. Now, I think the council, I know we had a work session a couple weeks ago, we talked about this, and we needed public safety. There's no question in our minds. Public safety is the core service government is offering. You know, we want to respond in emergencies. And we're kind of at that point. We're getting closer to that point where that is becoming more difficult. And Brad's been in front of our council probably 27 times in the last 2 years begging us for help. And we've done what we can with our current revenues. We're about to be cut. Ideally, that would go towards public safety. It's unclear to me if we could do that. I know Susan's aware of that bill potential, and we've yet to talk about that. But if it can't go towards public safety, and I will tell you, if we get in a situation as a council where we have to cut $750,000 out of our budget to maintain a minimum level of public services, fire, police, 911, ambulance, it's not going to come out of public safety. Basically, name any other department, Parks and Rec, Trails, Arts and Culture, any other department is going to be at the top of the cut list, okay? Those are the exact types of uses where that innkeeper's tax could go if it's not going to public safety. So we've got a chance to kind of maintain things like our historic buildings and fairgrounds. Like if the courthouse needs a renovation to the historic stairs in front of it, which it does, we don't have the money. And we certainly won't have the money if we're cutting $700,000 more out of our budget. So things like those things will be salvaged. You know, and again, I mean, unless you're, if you have an annual park pass and you're going into the park, the gate fee's not going to tax you. If you get a daily pass, and technically if a resident goes and has a daily pass, you would pay the 50 cents or a dollar. The tax impact is virtually zero. I'll say virtually zero to residents. And so it's exactly what the legislature and the governor are asking governments like ours to do, to find these funds. And so we're finding ourselves in a situation where it's more possible than it's ever been. This gate fee, we're hearing it's more possible than it's ever been. The innkeeper's tax, I mean, if our community supports it, it's the state legislature's decision. They can cut it to zero. It's their decision, not ours. It's their bill. They can write it how they want. They can amend it like they want. They can pass it or not pass it. And so, but if we don't support it, there's one thing I can guarantee. We will get zero. And we will see cuts, probably like we've never seen in multiple years, based on what we're seeing. This is what I'm seeing and what Jim is describing. And I'm kind of trying to paint this picture here. This is no longer some future wall or cliff that we're talking about. It's approaching much quicker than we actually even anticipated 3 weeks ago. Any questions on where I've started so far?
I want to add that when we were at AIC as well, because they were proposing these tax cuts, one of the things that they're wanting to look at is starting to toll 65, 74, 70, 69, et cetera. So those are things that they're looking at as well. So I just want to throw that out there.
That's somewhat of a reflection of electric vehicles. We can't get a gas tax on it. So they have to adjust somewhere in there. Just be ready for changes out there.
So I guess I would suggest that our next work session, the council kind of dig a little bit deeper into this, and maybe by that time, Susan can have some time to look into this, and if you have thoughts on it today that are helpful, that's good too. But I think we need more discussion about this. And Jim, what do you think?
Well, can you explain to me what the process is? I mean, to me, there's no discussion. If we can submit a request, I think you submit a request to Dave Hall. Dave Hall's got to carry it up. Does it go to the Ways and Means Committee? I mean, what's the step-by-step? Because here's the thing. If we don't ask for it, we will never get it. So why wouldn't you just simply ask for it? Because they're going to say is no. Right? So,
you know, I want to, you know, to taxpayers across the county, and I did talk to Kevin and Jimmy Tilton, who are both on the CBC, and appreciate you being here today. I mean, I would just invite you to come up, because, you know, my concern, obviously, is for the tourism community as well, right? I mean, I you know, something that's very important to us and to me. And so, you know, there, when you add for a family to come here, basically we're talking $5 a night is what that 3% would increase at, like $175 a night stay. Some will be $125 a stay, so it'd be left like $3 or whatever. But, you know, we don't want those prices to go up because of that. But here's the trick. If this money doesn't come in, we have those four options. We can do nothing to slash services to the bone. Basic services, probably below what we are required to go below. I mean, if I'm reading this picture right, or we could raise your income taxes, which I do not want to raise our service industry income taxes. I don't want to raise our employee, none of our public income taxes. I don't want to raise our property taxes on people who have nothing to do. You know, there's no reason why we should be taxing these people for services that, quite frankly, have been difficult to manage. I mean, Sheriff, you're back there. Do you have thoughts? But we do want to hear. Scott, be very intentional about this, even though I agree with you.
Can we just do something? I had a phone call earlier before I came over here today at the office. And the individual I spoke with was pushing back on this 3% going from 5 to 8. Matter of fact, when they languished it, they referred to it as a 60% increase, which if you do the math, that's what it is. So a 60% increase sounds like a lot of money. But when I pushed back and I said, well, wait a minute, you know, let's assume that it costs $200 a night to stay in Brown County. And if it's a 3%, if you're going from 5% to 8%, that's 3%. So let me see, 3% on $100, that would be like $3, right? So 3% on $200, oh, that'd be like $6. So if I'm going to come down here and I want to come down for a 3 or 4 day vacation, weekend, whatever, all right, if my money's that tight that I can't afford a $6 increase on a night stay for $200, then I guess they'll have to not buy as many cocktails when they go out and drink, or cut it someplace else, or I suppose they'll just have to put it on the credit card and make an extra month's payment. I don't know. But it's $6 is what you're talking about for a two-night stay. So, or a one-night stay at $200 a night. So we're not talking about an enormous amount of money individually.
Understood. I think about the pressure on our public safety first and foremost, and, you know, replaying Brad and others. You know, I mean, fire, I mean, I think everyone in this room knows how little we fund our volunteer firefighters that provide emergency medical service to 3 million tourists a year as needed. It is absolutely got to change. We have to enhance. They've been telling us this. Brad's been telling us for 2 years, raising the alarm. They've been telling us for 20. And so ambulance is a problem. I don't know if you've noticed this, but our ambulances are being MOU, we have a mutual aid agreement with Monroe County, who is having an ambulance issue as well. They don't have enough ambulances, and so when they need one and there's an emergency, they're borrowing ours. Well, it takes an hour to get to Bloomington and back. So a resident, a senior, a person in an emergency who pays property taxes, lives here, pays income taxes, you know, whether it's the 3 million tourists that delays their emergency services or it's Monroe County, we got a problem here. And our residents are footing that bill, and have been forever. And to increase our, to kind of fix our public safety problems without taxing them a penny is really hard
enough to do. Just for those of you that may not know, I believe we pay $650,000 a year for the ambulance.
Minimum.
Is that what you
minimum
said? Yeah. Right. So Scott, again, to me personally, I don't know, this is, if we don't ask for it, we'll never get it. So I'm not quite sure why we wouldn't ask for it. Send it in and see what happens.
So what are the options, Scott? We're just going to move ahead.
I think we support it wholeheartedly as a community. That includes the CBC, the sheriff's office, the commissioners, the council, the foundation, you know, Joe Bob and Jane Bob and Billy Bob and Bobby Bob, everybody. Because, I mean, there's one thing I can guarantee is if we don't support it, this thing is dead and we will get zero. And then what's going to happen is we got some very difficult choices to make in where we raise that money to provide minimum public services. And shocker, shocker, it's going to be from you.
Okay.
There's no one else to pay it.
Scott, I have a question for you. From a statutory standpoint, who has the legal ability to do what you're talking about? Is it council only? Is it council and commissioners?
It's state legislation. We have zero control over it.
No. Who has the statutory responsibility to submit the request to the General Assembly for this legislative request?
But anybody can submit the request to the state legislature. So right now what your statute says is up to 5% for innkeeper's tax, and you're at the top of that rate. If the state legislature amends your statute where it's up to 8%, then it comes back to the county council to establish the rate here in the county, anywhere from 0 to 8%.
So anybody off the street, I could just, Jim can't send us a request.
Yeah.
Okay, and then if they approve it, then it comes back. And the statutory, the only legal body would be the statutory, the council that has the ability, the legal statutory ability to approve it, amend it, or whatever.
Approve the rate, correct.
Approve the rate, got it. Mm-hmm. Okay, so basically, you send it in, see what the heck happens.
Yes.
And then see what comes back and whatever they come back with, then you make a decision, is that what you want to do?
Correct.
So we have nothing to lose.
Correct. Not
well, right, what we have to lose is doing nothing, right? We have everything to lose, actually.
Well, but the decision is, you've got to submit it first.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. It's so proactive. And Kevin, I know I'm interested in hearing what you want to say here, especially Kevin's our appointment on the CBC and has been for many years. The other things that in talking to the council, you know, the consensus was that we wanted to try to improve was to kind of broaden the eligibility to serve on the CBC. Right now we say hotel motel owner, which is very limited. It's like five people in the county, right, that can serve on. There's only so many hotels and motels. We think lodging would include all the people who do lodging activities in town. Outdoor recreation, retail, and arts. We know the shopkeepers have always wanted an involvement in that. We just kind of want to make them eligible to serve, and Kevin had a great point in making sure we maintain a leadership function of the lodging people on this, because they're the ones that are most incented to drive the innkeeper's tax dollars, and we want that to grow and continue to grow like it has. We had a record last year, $1.3 million, I think, in collections. We want to take our council appointments down to 1 year. from two to match the commissioners. We want to use that money, the additional 3%, for county essential services. And if we can't get it for public safety, again, we don't have a right to draft this, to write this for the legislature. They write it. We get it for public safety, that's where we really want it. But if we can only get it for parks and rec, historic structures, courthouse, Pioneer Village, fairgrounds, things we're already required to do and have major capital expenses to fund, so be it. That will take pressure off our general fund. We want to go from 5 to 8%. Kevin, what are your thoughts?
Kevin Alt here. Yeah, Kevin Alt. Several hats. One, I'm the president of the Convention Visitors Commission. I've been on the commission for 20 plus years as a council appointment. Also own two hotels in Nashville, own a restaurant in Nashville, and also on the Sheriff's Merit Board. So I cover a lot. I'm also on the Art Gallery Board, and I'm on next year I'll be on a committee for the Community Foundation. So I see this from a lot of directions. You know, from the tourist standpoint, while Jim is correct, on a $200 a night stay, they'd be paying, you know, the 8%, they'd be paying $16 a night, plus 7% state sales tax. So you got 15% per night, so they're going to be paying additional, you know. The addition is only $6. I understand what you're coming from, and Scott and I had this conversation of, you know, it's in the area of $5. So I'm not saying I support it. I don't support it because I want to see what the legislation comes down to. I understand where the council comes from. I understand where the county comes from, and especially when it has to do with public safety. Not just our sheriff's office, but our fire and, you know, all those people that the search and rescue, the ambulance. I think I have a little bit of an issue with the ambulance, but, you know, if we're contracted to have two ambulances, we should have two ambulances. And if we're paying $650,000 a year, hopefully the commissioners are going to look at that, because Bartholomew County, while they have a hospital in their county, just signed a contract with the Columbus Regional Ambulance Service, getting five ambulances for $840,000 a year, and we're getting two ambulances from IU Health for $650,000. You know, I'm sure it's because Columbus Regional is in their county, but still, there has to be something else we can do for that. But with that being said, you know, whatever we can do to look to increase the income for the county, I am would not support the council increasing the income tax. Property tax, I don't think it needs to be increased, but I think there's, you know, ways that you can look at some of that too, and I don't know how you do that, because I don't know how all the property tax stuff works. It's lots of hidden numbers and fine lines there. So, but I do agree, you know, the innkeeper's tax is something to look at. So, there again, I would really hope that the legislation could be, and I think they really can define it, at least from a start, that it's for public safety or whatever we determine it's going to be. It might get changed along the way, just because it's going to have to attach to something, and they're going to barter when it gets to end the legislation. The best thing for Brenton is Brenton has its own innkeeper's tax legislation. We're not under the unified state innkeeper's tax code. We have our own. And once that's approved by the state, this council creates the ordinance that says what it's going to be. When it was created at the 5%, you had to adopt it, you know, at 5%. You could have adopted it at 4%. You know, so if it goes to 8% and you see that you can do it with 6% or 7%, then that's what you can adopt to that, but knowing that you've got a cap at 8%.
So. How long's it been at 5%?
Well, it went in 1984, so probably since the
90 or 92, I think,
yeah,
is what it says on the...
I think 93 is
when we... 32 years, maybe?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, we've had it for 40 years. So.
Hadn't changed.
No, it started out 3%.
I thought it, yeah.
Yeah, it started out 3%, and in 91, I think, during the legislation, went to 5%.
Gotcha.
I think 92 is when.
Why did it go up then? You were around, what? I was around too, I'm not saying.
Yeah, I just don't remember exactly why.
2% increase.
Yeah.
Huh. Okay.
I think it's, you know, everybody around us was going up at that point, and that's why.
Yeah.
Looked at it.
So we're seeing that now, I think, and well, and I'll tell you, after the legislature, if they're cutting our property taxes, we're going to see almost every one of those counties laser focused on things exactly like this. The other thing I forgot to add, and this is important, I mean, if you keep in mind Jim's 2-year outlook that he gave, the legislature sets a 2-year budget, okay, and this is a budget year. They're going to set a 2-year budget. We will not have another chance to make a financial change that's significant like this for 2 more years. So if we wait 2 years, we've got really, at that point, it's an emergency, I think. Is, you know, if I'm hearing Jim correctly, it could be very well be, you know, a critical situation. And so, for that reason, I think we do need to support it as a community. I mean, I know future Commissioner Tim Clark is here. I don't know if you have thoughts on it. Jimmy, I know you got thoughts. Brad, I mean, you know, anybody, I don't want to step over the president here, but it may be worth taking some input. Anybody has anything they'd like to say, Brad? I mean, I'd like to hear, I've heard that there's very little impact on public safety from tourism, and I just have a hard time understanding that. Can you help us understand that?
That's absolutely incorrect. Sheriff Brad Stocksville, without a doubt, we have an impact on our resources when it's tourist season or from tourists. When I first took office, was when a bill, when Dave Hall was trying to first pass the one bill, I wanted to give testimony at State House. For the years of 20, 21, and 22, we had answered 431 calls for service in the state park alone. So through those years, so that was just us answering calls for service. That wasn't an ambulance, that wasn't a fire, that was us. And that's with 3 DNR officers on full time, so they cannot cover it 24/7.
Can those be dangerous? I mean, you're not getting shot at up there, are you?
Well, we haven't yet.
Somebody's been shot up there. Right?
There was a shot. So it's been shot at the.
Can you come up to
the dean? I'll just withhold.
Sorry, no. I don't want to distract you.
Get back to it.
Yeah, that was not our department.
Oh, it was the city department. Gotcha. Okay, well then. Yeah.
But no, it tourism does impact our services. Without a doubt. I mean, you can't go from 15,500 to 60,000-80,000 people and it not affect our services. It 100% does. It affects our ambulances. It affects our police. It affects our fire. We, you know, when we go answer all these calls in the park, I mean, lost people on the trails to mountain bikers that are hitting trees, to, you know, bee stings, everything that we go in there for all kinds of things. We occasionally have domestics in the campgrounds. We occasionally have domestics at our tourist rentals. We occasionally have, you know, people tend to want to drink when they take their vacations. Sometimes tempers flare, and we have to step in and get called into those. So, I mean, to find the numbers, we could do it. It would take some effort, but I can tell you, I've been on a job here 35 years. October is, without a doubt, always our busiest month, without a doubt, 100%. Every year, October, we are busier than we are any other time of the year. It's just, and that's simply from tourism.
Well, Brad, why can't you just hire officers in October and fire them in November? Is that not how
that easy?
Yeah. Sorry.
Seasonal work? Yeah.
Yeah, seasonal work. Yeah. An ambulance? Yeah. Let me ask you, you said something real that triggered me there to remember something. The other thing we want to do, for some reason back in the 80s, I asked Kevin this. We don't know why it happened. But we prevented our county from taxing state and federal campgrounds with innkeeper's tax. We said we can't do it. Well, when you have a family staying in a tent with no shelter, essentially, in the park, it's probably worse than if they were in a hotel in terms of their public safety impact, potentially. Those people are also more adventurous, they're on bikes, hiking, you know, and so we want to strike that, and it'll come back to the council, and we can choose potentially to tax that entity, which will also raise all boats in the tourism industry. It should raise your revenue as well for the innkeeper's tax.
So that's on the table you're proposing?
Yeah, we talked about that, and it was...
Quick situation we had at Yellowwood this summer is we had two campsites. One guy was pretty drunk, getting into fights with another campsite. He tries to run through, drive through their campsite. Luckily, there was a picnic table there, or he would have ran over their potentially... their kid that was in a tent. When officers arrived, he fled. We chased him. I go from 135 South, catch up to the pursuit in Morgan County, where we end up, we have to beanbag the guy again. I mean, it was, and that was all just from tourism in Yellowwood State Forest that ended led to, and he's
in jail.
Yeah, he's still in jail, and
so you get involved in this too, huh? Your justice system is also impacted. Is that a fair statement? Justice system.
Oh, big time. Yep.
Big time.
Yes. And when folks get lost in the park, we do a geofence search warrant essentially, in order to ping their cell phone. That's all requiring the court, the justice system, and a prosecutor, and a judge. So, the park greatly impacts public safety.
Yeah. I don't want us to become a county where people don't feel safe to come. Because if we become a county where people do not feel safe to come, then we know how that's going to affect us.
Well. I don't either. And I know that one thing, like the park gate tax, which I've talked about that, I've talked to Dave Hall and stuff. When I was in Florida, I saw the exact same thing. When we went into state parks, county tax, 50 cents, right there on the gate. With that being said, I think the reason the state is looking at it different from what we've always done in the past, we've just asked the state to give us some of their money that they're receiving. With adding a gate fee tax on there, they're looking at it differently. Last Thursday, I talked to the ISA's lobbyist to try to push him on this as well, to get our lobbyists through the ISA to also push that bill to help us, and the smaller counties that have a lot of public land to assist with this. So that's...
I appreciate that. Thank you. And I know, you know, can't tell you this is the last time you're going to need to come in here, but let's hope it's getting closer to being resolved. And by the way, Jim, sorry, this money, if both of these bills pass, typically would be start in January 2026. Now, if we get an emergency declared for these bills, it could start July 1, 25. So we still got at least 6 months, maybe a year, before we see a penny coming through. So, sorry, Jim, go ahead.
What does it mean to be beanbagged by the lobby? Is that something that I've ever
you been beanbagged? You don't want to know. Just demonstrate on Jim when you're
we,
meeting. Yeah,
you know, yeah. We can use you in training.
Two other factors I'd like to mention here is that the taxes come from individuals, usually farms, and then industry or commercial. We don't really have much commercial. Our limited farmland, and therefore our only real industry is tourism. So that's about the only place we can really tap into to get taxes. Thanks, Brad. The other thing to keep aware of is that if it comes down to either counties grow a bit or they tend to stabilize or diminish, that the tax, if you don't get more people, the rates are going to go up. You know that. I mean, infrastructure and things like that cost more money. On the jails, you know, 20, 30 years ago, it was probably just locks. Now you got to have full IT security systems and all that for $300,000 to $500,000. So people's tax rate can go up if it's just the same number of people. So if we can grow a bit, and as Jim mentioned, getting work-related people. The other factor I'm seeing is that we don't have a large base of people to draw from to get even government or other jobs in the county. So that limits us in a number of ways.
Some other inherent factors. I mean, would you take a motion? I'm hearing a lot of support here from Council Joel. I don't know if you have thoughts, but I'd like to just move this ball forward. I mean, if you want.
Yeah. Get it done.
So let's take
Stop
a vote.
Stop talking about it. Just do it.
If you take a motion.
Let's take a motion. Right. Move ahead.
I'll make a motion that Scott stops talking and submits whatever he's got to do to apply for this dollar gate fee and 3% bump on the innkeeper's tax.
Would you take a quick amendment? Just basically encourage commissioners, county, community organizations to also support it.
Okay.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Yeah, everybody needs support. Thanks.
Motion made. Did you second it?
I did. Second.
All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion passed.
Could we get the prosecutor up here before he...
Yeah, for Easton.
Yeah, come on up, Ted.
You want to go home?
Totally fine.
I know it's entertaining, but we'll deal with business with you for a while.
Yeah. Well, after all that, Ted Adams, prosecutor, good evening, everybody. After all that talk, I come with bad news. And I've talked to some of you on the council already about this. We have a fund, a grant-funded position, in the investigator position that I've eliminated the position once Mr. Hamilton retired, that unbeknownst to me was running in the red for years, and then that compounded into running in the red for years into a big amount of money. This was not anything nefarious. I mean, we ran within the budget we submitted to the council. We didn't overspend for the money that we submitted to the council. These funds are, these grant-driven funds are, they're accounting nightmares. I don't want to speak for, you know, Mr. Savage or Ms. Reeves, but they are accounting nightmares. That particular fund is like a 75-25 match. And the funding for them sometimes comes in 6 months. Sometimes it's in an 18-month implement. Sometimes you get what you ask for. Sometimes you get less than what you ask for. But, again, unbeknownst to me, I think Ms. Cobian found it either earlier this year or last year and identified there was an issue. She said, let me work on it for a while. And she worked on it. And then Mr. Savage worked on it. I can't tell you how, I don't know how it happened. I really don't know how it happened. Everything we've done has always been public, and again, I stress we didn't overspend. It's just the money didn't get moved. From my understanding, the money didn't get moved from one pot to the...
We believe the match wasn't kept up to where it needed to be.
Yeah.
Is what happened.
Lay it on.
County match.
What are we talking?
It's $80,000.
Okay. What do you need?
I don't know.
$80,000? Okay.
I think... My understanding is, we owe it to ourselves? I don't...
Oh, interesting.
I mean, right now you've covered his budget out of general fund, right? He was expecting this $80,000 to come out of a federal grant that you just either didn't get the money or, like she said, you didn't keep up with the match.
We didn't keep up with the match. Pretty much.
So you've spent general fund dollars.
Right, but does that mean we need to pay back the Fed for the 80 grand? Do we need to cut a check to that?
I don't think we owe them.
You don't owe them.
At all. Or they would have been knocking a while ago.
Which we don't owe them. But his budget is not correct from $80,000.
Okay, so the long and short of it is we need to get together, have a meeting, tackle this, get very clear, crystal clear on what needs to be done, and get it done.
Yep.
What's the deadline for getting it done by? Do we have a deadline we have to meet?
Not currently, but as soon as possible.
Can we set a deadline?
Yeah, set a deadline.
Okay, January 15th, or by January of whatever our council meeting is in January. So in other words, let's do our due diligence, make sure we're crystal clear on this issue.
And then we
just knock it out at January meeting and be done with it, put it behind us.
That sounds good. I don't know what else. And again, I've eliminated the position. If you remember, we absorbed that position.
Right.
It will be my goal. Ms. Wonder is my victim advocate. She has a similar grant that works the same way, that is as big of a nightmare to administer. it's going to be my proposition eventually, maybe this next budget cycle, to get rid of these grants. I think Jill's grant, Ms. Wonder Seward's grant, has been a problem since I've assumed the office and preceding me, and I'm just done with it. And they're cutting budgets anyway, they're cutting those grants anyway.
I believe Jill and I will agree with that.
It'll be my proposition eventually, because she's got a constitutional requirement, I've got a constitutional requirement, keep victims up to speed, and that's her job. And so it's going to be my eventual proposition to get rid of that grant. I just don't think it's worth the hassle. Quite frankly, I just don't, you know, if she gets 70% of her, you know, salary paid by the state, I think she spends 70% of her time administering to the grant. I'd rather have her actually working and doing her job. It's become a nightmare. And things like this happen that I can't even explain. I don't even understand. I didn't know what was going on. I wish I could tell you how, but I don't. All I can do is tackle the problem and eliminate these. I just want to get out of these two grants. These cash match grants for positions are a nightmare.
Okay, we're going to have a work session early January. We can probably bring it up then.
Housekeeping. We're going to turn it over to housekeeping, and they'll take care of it.
So, and I have a question. Is the grant the problem or the administration of the grant? The fact that we've somehow got lost in the shuffle there?
I don't know. Okay. I do not
know.
We need
to find that out.
We have a lot of paperwork already on it.
All right, fine. We'll sort that out the next month.
May I, if I could be active, and I'd like to be active in the House meeting, can we bump that to January 30th? I got a level one child molest. Jury trial.
January 30th. It's a new deadline for this.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm not delaying it. I want to be engaged in it.
I just want to set a deadline so we get it done.
Okay.
If we don't, then it could linger forever.
Okay.
No, it isn't.
I don't
know.
Okay.
All right. So we're January 30th.
Okay.
Thank you, Deb.
Appreciate it. Thanks, Deb.
Understand, if you get rid of a grant, you're either funding that position 100% out of general fund, or he's got to come up with that out of diversion deferral.
All right. Well, sounds like we have been funding
diversion deferral. We didn't know that was an option.
It's not that big of a
question. We want to have a victim's advocate.
Yeah, absolutely. We want them to. Yeah, at least one, right?
So we have a victim advocate then.
Victim's
advocate.
We do.
Thank goodness.
Jill Sewer, too.
Yeah. Thank you.
Victim advocate.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Where do you see?
I don't know why that's on there. It's not mine.
Thank you, Ted.
Okay. Does anybody know why the RDC is on here?
No.
Actually, you mentioned it.
It's Economic Development District.
Oh, yeah, it's right. EDC.
Oh, yeah. I wondered what that
regional,
was.
Regional EDC.
Yeah, it's getting late. Let's kick it to our work session. Basically, it's an Economic Development District that we can enter into that will provide new avenues for funding, which we desperately need, and transportation, parks and recreation, trails, infrastructure, the things we can't fund elsewhere. So we've talked about it in a work session.
Hey, May the 21st, I was gone. That was the work session.
I found an email from May 22nd.
It's from you. The next item on the agenda is we are going to have a meeting on the 30th. Do we need to take a vote or anything on that?
Right. I just need to know from you all what you want on the agenda other than additional appropriations that are housekeeping items for the end of the year that Julie needs to have passed.
I want to pop in and pop out.
Right. That's
I think that's pretty much.
That's why we kept this meeting tonight.
Right.
So you guys didn't take
action. We've got those 10-day advertisement appropriations. That's the primary purpose of that meeting.
Susan, thanks for keeping us on track.
Yeah.
Okay. Good job.
So we agreed on that for the 30th, right?
30th at 9 o'clock. I'll pop out. Additional appropriations will be the only thing on the agenda.
All right.
Okay. Well, that's probably add a snow day.
Yeah, probably add something. I got to know what you're adding because I have to advertise what you're adding.
Well, not
advertise, but notice.
Right. Yeah.
Cool. This is for appropriations. That's why we're at it. Period.
Yeah.
All right.
Pop out.
All right. Oh, motion adjourned.
Second.
Oh, there I say. All right. All right. So, I guess we're all. How are you doing?
Good.
Everybody over on the outside?